out of 22 eight verse segments, 11 times in there, he uses that word quicken. It's his prayer that the Lord would quicken or to revive him. And we talked about that a little bit last time. So let's go to verse 153. Consider my affliction and deliver me, for I do not forget your law. Plead my cause and redeem me. Revive me according to your word. Salvation is far from the wicked, for they do not seek your statutes. Great are your tender mercies, O Lord. Revive me according to your judgments. Many are my persecutors and my enemies, yet I do not turn from your testimonies. I see the treacherous and am disgusted, because they do not keep your word. Consider how I love your precepts. Revive me, O Lord, according to your loving kindness. The entirety of your word is truth, and every one of your righteous judgments endures forever. Tonight we're going to look at mainly two concepts here, the aspect of affliction and God pleading his cause. But he begins by saying, consider my affliction. And then he says it again down in 159, consider how I love your precepts. So you have consider my affliction and consider my affections, if you wanted to alliterate those two, how much I love your precepts. So consider here is to look upon, to find out, to give attention to. He's asking that God would look carefully at what he's experiencing, how much he is suffering. Our sufferings affect us very deeply, don't they? I mean, it's not usually things that we just kind of brush off. Sometimes you get stung by a small bug or something and you can kind of just brush it off and rub it a little bit and go on. And then there's other times you get stung by a bumblebee or a wasp or something, and that sticks with you a while, right? It hurts. And that's a lot of our afflictions are that way. They really hurt us deeply. And so in his suffering, he is concerned that God should look upon him and see how miserable he is. And it didn't matter what brought on the suffering. There's all kinds of different reasons why we might suffer. And we might mention some of those in a minute. But he wants God to look carefully at just how absolutely miserable he is at this time. And Charles Spurgeon says, for God to consider is to act in due season. And that's a confidence that we should gain from the scriptures, that as we come to God in our misery and we cast our cares upon him and we call upon him to consider us and to look upon us and to see how miserable we are, we have the confidence that God in his loving kindness is paying attention. He does see and he responds. Yeah, so it is for God to act in due season. Men consider and do nothing, but such is never the case with God. And how hard-hearted we can be as human beings to look on somebody else's misery and suffering and not do anything. And sometimes we just feel powerless. We don't know what to do. We don't know that there's anything that we can do. But with God, that's not an issue. That's not a problem. He is always able. He is always he always fully understands the situation, and he's always able to act, and he's able to meet the need that we have. Let's look at some of these verses here. Matthew chapter 9 and verse 36. Okay, who is it talking about? Jesus. And what was taking place? What was the activity there, the action word? Okay. Okay, it says when he saw the multitude, he had compassion on them. Okay, Matthew chapter 14 and verse 14. Okay, and again, who is it? Jesus. Okay, and what was the action? Okay, he was moved with compassion and healed their sick. So when Jesus sees, he responds with pity and he takes action. Luke chapter 7 and verse 13. Okay, look back and see what is the context. What, who is the her in that? Say again. Okay, a widow with a dead son. Okay, and Jesus was moved with compassion there as well. And then Luke chapter 10, verse 33. Okay, who? Okay, the Good Samaritan. And when he saw him, he had compassion. Okay, the other ones I set here were Jesus was the one that saw and had compassion, but this is set forward as an example, right? They should have seen this suffering man, saw how he had been beaten and have compassion and care for him, but they passed on the other side. They crossed over. They turned their faces away from him and they went on, but the Good Samaritan, having seen him, had compassion and ministered to him. See Luke 15 and verse 20. Okay, who? The Father. Okay, so we're talking about the prodigal son who had gone astray, lived a life of sin, and when his father saw him, he had compassion on him, right? Did I get that story right? Okay. So why is it so important to see these verses? David is calling upon the Lord, consider me. Consider my affliction. Why would I bring up Jesus? Okay, we're to be like him. Because he is God, he is the manifestation of the Father. Right? He is showing us who God is. And sometimes it's hard for us to get a good, clear picture of God. Sometimes we get to focusing on one thing or another, and we forget other aspects. When we start looking at the holiness of God, the commandments, the punishment of sin, and those things can kind of give us a very negative view of God, a view of maybe an angry God. But we need to realize that that is entirely in balance with the loving kindness of God, so that when God looks upon humanity, when he looks upon my life, he is able to see my misery, my affliction, and have compassion upon me. And when God would have compassion, he also takes action, just as Jesus did in each case. He saw, he had compassion or pity, and then he did something. And so this is to be an encouragement. This is our Savior. This is the one we serve. This is the one whose Spirit resides within us. And when we are suffering, we can have this comfort that our Savior is moved with compassion. Because when we are afflicted, we can get very self-centered. We can get very myopic. We just see one thing. We just see our problem. We need to realize that our Savior cares. He's there. And he is considering us. He considers us in our affliction. The word there is poverty, misery, or affliction. And every saint has some form of affliction. You're not unique. You're not alone. You may be facing something that those in your near vicinity aren't experiencing, but it's not new. There's nothing new under the sun. These things have happened to others. And we bring upon ourselves some afflictions, and other afflictions God brings upon us. But you look at even just the little example of Jesus, it was different things that produced pity in his heart. He saw the lost multitude, and he had compassion upon them. He saw that they were hungry, and he had compassion upon them. He sees a mother grieving over a dead son, and he has compassion upon. It didn't matter what the source of the suffering was. And sometimes we bring a lot of our afflictions upon ourselves by our stubbornness, our selfishness, our sinfulness, our rebellion against God, and we suffer for those things. There's consequences to our sin. And even then, we can turn to the Lord and say, Lord, look upon me. Consider my afflictions. And to know that he still cares, even when we've brought it upon ourselves. Every saint has some affliction, and the enemies are inevitable, for the disciple cannot be loved where the master is hated. We're going to go out into this world. We're going to go shopping. We're going to go to work. We're going to have neighbors. And as long as we are living a testimony for Jesus Christ, there's going to be people that hate us. There's going to be those that would set themselves as enemies against us. And it's not our fault that that happens. And it brings affliction into our life. Let's look at some of these that were afflicted. Genesis chapter 16 and verse 11. So who was it that was afflicted? Why was she afflicted? And what happened? Okay, she ran off. But in our verse there, in verse 11... Okay, God heard and then responded with encouragement there that she was going to have a son to name his name Ishmael. Ishmael means, what's that? Okay, means that God hears. And so he was a living testimony to God's response to her afflictions. Then let's look at chapter 29, verse 32.
So Leah conceived and bore a son, and she called his name Reuben, for therefore my husband will love me.
Okay, so we have who?
Leah.
And what was the problem? Okay. And what happened? Okay. And what is the testimony of that? She said,
The Lord has heard that I'm unloved.
Has looked. And let's look at chapter 41 and verse 52. So who is this?
Joseph.
And what was his affliction? Okay, he had a series of life tragedies. And it's with relationships, right? It was a relationship with his brothers, relationship with Potiphar, relationship with the... Was it the butler that didn't remember him? And so it's just these series of things that you could look at it, people sinning against him. Let's look at Exodus chapter 3 and verse 7. Okay. Who? Who is afflicted? Why were they afflicted? And what does it say about God? Okay, he's... And then what happened after that was the deliverance, right? The whole book of Exodus is the topic of that deliverance. Ruth chapter 1, verse 21... excuse me, I skipped some here. Numbers 11:11. Who? Why? Okay. He said something else there. Where did the affliction come from? So he's looking at this as the fact that God has laid this affliction on him. This affliction was sourced in God. And so he's really struggling here, isn't he? Let's go on to Judges chapter 2 and verse 18. So again, we have Israel, right? And the immediate issue was the taskmasters, the affliction of those that oppressed them. But what was the source of that? What was the cause of that? The book of Judges has this cycle that's taking place. Okay. It's their sin, their disobedience, their... enslavement. And what does it say about God? Okay, it said something else in there. He's moved to pity by their groaning. And then he saves them. Ruth chapter 1 and verse 21. Who?
Naomi.
How do you spell Naomi?
Naomi.
And why does she say that she's afflicted? God has dealt harshly with her. So she's looking at, she's placing the blame back upon God for the hardships of her life. And what's this the conclusion that we come to in the story of Naomi. I didn't put down the verses, but she has a complete attitude change at some point, right? God deals well with her in giving her Ruth. God continues to deal well, providing her food and eventually offspring and bringing joy back into her life. So God has seen and responded to her suffering. 1 Samuel 1:11. One of our Hannahs want to read this one? Okay. So we have Hannah. She's childless. She has a relationship with the second wife. And she wants God to... Okay. Wants God to look upon her. Okay. 1 Samuel 16:12. That is not the right verse. Well, we've got enough examples here. Go ahead and go to 22 and verse 28. What am I in second? Maybe I need to be in 2 Samuel. There we go. 2 Samuel 16:12.
It may be that the Lord will look on my affliction and that the Lord will repay me with good for his cursing this day.
Okay. I'm running out of room on my board, but who is it here? Okay, we have David and the problem there. Yes. Here, David is cursed by Shimei. I don't even know how Shimei. And he anticipates that God could look upon his affliction. And then chapter 22, verse 28. Okay. So this is a psalm, a praise of deliverance. And God is looking upon his people. So, I'm sure we did not exhaust all of the suffering of the Old Testament here, but we have multiple examples of God's people who were afflicted. They were deeply pained. They had different reasons. A lot of them had to do with relationships with other people. But some of them they looked at as the circumstances of their life, by the sovereignty of God, they were blaming God. Why did you allow these things to happen to me? Why did you pick me for this job? Why has the Lord dealt so harshly with us? We even have Israel's sin. So when we consider the afflictions of our life, knowing that in every case that we have up here of godly individuals who were afflicted, God did what? He heard, he saw it, and he acted. Right? Every case, God heard it, he saw it, he reacted, he responded to it. And this ought to be an encouragement to us. When we're afflicted, it just seems like there's no end to it. It's going to go on forever. Life is never going to be better than it is right now. Just as well end it all. Yeah, we can get very dark. We can get very depressed. We can be very selfish and looking exclusively to our own desires. But to remember that when we call out to God in our times of affliction, God hears, He sees it, He's looked into it, and He is responding to that. Sometimes those afflictions are things that happen to us. Loss, people die, illness of one kind or another, broken relationships, circumstances that we can't get ourselves out of, and we just feel miserable day in and day out. But remember that God responds. And so David, in get back to our Psalm 119, he says, "Consider my affliction and deliver me, for I do not forget your law. Plead my cause and redeem me." The word plead there is to strive or to contend with or to fight. The idea of fighting my battle for me. And so there's a recognition here that I can't fight this battle. I've tried to fight this battle and I'm losing. But God can fight this battle on my behalf if He would so choose. It brings up the picture of the courtroom defense. You're on trial. Somebody has said something evil against you. Accusations have been brought. And you need somebody to step up and respond to those things and defend you against them. We have to move a little bit quicker if we're going to get through all of these. 1 Samuel 25 and verse 39. Okay, so David has been sinned against. He had treated Nabal well. Nabal returns evil for good. David was about to take action against him, but here we see that rather than David defending himself, God acted. God took action and defended David. And sometimes the hardest thing to do is to receive evil from others without taking action against them. We want to defend ourselves. We want to get even. We want to make it right, and so we take action rather than placing it in God's hand, trusting that God is able to go to fight our battles for us. Psalm 35:1. Okay, David has learned to go to the Lord and ask Him to fight His battles for him. Psalm 43 and verse 1. Okay, he's desiring again that God would vindicate him. In this case, it was against a nation, right? Plead my cause against an ungodly nation. Proverbs 22 and verse 23. You have to back up and catch the who in this case.
It says, "Do not rob the poor because he is poor, nor the needy."
Okay, so God is going to defend the poor and the afflicted. Proverbs 23:11. Okay, again, you have to back up to catch the who. Okay, the cause of the fatherless. Isaiah 51, verses 22 and 23. Okay, so his people had been afflicted because of their sin. He's brought his judgment upon them, and now he's going to take up their cause and remove that cup of sorrow, cup of judgment from them, and place it upon their enemies. Jeremiah chapter 50 and verse 33. Lamentations 3 and verse 58.
O Lord, you have pleaded my soul's cause, you have redeemed me.
And then Micah 7 9.
I will bear the indignation case and execute.
Okay, so there's a number of things there, just following this concept of God pleading or fighting for his people. It's against other individuals. It's at times when you can't defend yourself. It is against those that you can't defend yourself against, even a wicked nation, which has all kinds of, you know, practical applications in the day and age we live in. There's all kinds of things taking place that are doing damage to people because of wicked men. But we see that God is strong. I think that was in the Jeremiah 50 verse. He is mighty. God is able. He is able to fight our battles for us. And we need to be casting ourselves upon him, just as David has learned to do that in the psalm, pleading with God to look intently upon his misery and to plead his cause on his behalf. And again, we saw it in Micah 7. Even in our own sufferings that we brought upon ourselves, even when we're miserable because of our own sinfulness, his faith was in God, that he would look at him and see that misery and eventually bring him through to a better position, bringing justice about for him. And so I want us to just be encouraged as we look at the passage today. We're experiencing suffering and misery all our life long. There's always going to be things, but God's loving kindness is greater than the number of our enemies. It's greater than the number of our afflictions. And I'm not in the right spot, but it's the word great there literally means many. So God's loving kindness is great, or it is many. It's much, it's numerous, it's abounding. And so it puts a little bit of a contrast between his many afflictions, his many enemies, and God's many loving kindnesses. So we'll conclude with that tonight.